Penguin Random House Audio presents The Country of the Blind, A Memoir at the End of Sight. This is the author, Andrew Leland.
For Lily and Oscar. What so clearly appears as an end is better understood as a beginning whose innermost meaning we cannot yet grasp. Our present is emphatically, and not merely logically, the suspense between a no longer and a not yet. Hannah Arendt, Men in Dark Times. The splinter in your eye is the best magnifying glass. Theodore Adorno, Minima Moralia, Reflections from Damaged Life. Author's note. I've changed the names of a handful of non-public figures to protect their privacy. Introduction. The end begins. I'm going blind as I write this. It feels less dramatic than it sounds. The words aren't disappearing as I type. I'm sitting comfortably in the sunroom. The sun is rising like it's supposed to. I can plainly see Lily sitting next to me, reading in her striped pajamas. The visible world is disappearing, but it's not in a hurry. It feels at once catastrophic and commonplace, like reading an article about civilization's imminent collapse from the climate crisis, then setting the article down and going for a pleasant bike ride through a mild spring morning. There's no cure for retinitis pigmentosa, RP, the condition I was diagnosed with more than 20 years ago, so I usually see my eye specialist every other year. At these visits, I go through a full day of tests, but these just track the decline. At the end of the day, we have a short conversation about the someday promise of stem cell or gene therapy. During my last visit, she showed me an illustration of how much vision I had left. It reminded me of ice cubes melting in hot water, two small, wobbly ovals in the center and two skinny shapes floating along the sides. The wobbly ovals represented the central vision I still had, and the strips were my peripheral vision. I had about 6% of what a fully sighted person sees. My doctor frowned graciously as she gestured at the skinny French fry shapes. "When those go," she said in her medical deadpan, neither cheerful nor grim, "your mobility will become more limited. Those two strips of residual peripheral vision are what you're using to get around." Describing what I can't see is surprisingly difficult, mostly because my brain adapts to it so quickly. I have severe tunnel vision, but what I see doesn't look like a tunnel. The walls of the enclosure aren't visible. I have the strongest sense of the contours of my blindness in periods when my vision changes, when suddenly there are things I don't see that I ought to, that I saw until recently. I bump into furniture in my house that hasn't moved in years. I'll put a cup down for a moment and it disappears. I'll painstakingly rake the wobbly ovals and slender French fries of my residual vision across the table's surface again and again, and when I finally find the cup, it's standing blamelessly in what even a few weeks ago I would have described as plain sight. It's still in plain sight. It's just that my sight is growing less and less plain. RP is painless, if you don't count the bruises that accumulate from violent encounters with inanimate objects, like chairs that haven't been pushed in all the way, or cabinet doors that have been left to hang open. The most painful part, so far, has been the not knowing. I live much of my life these days in a speculative mode, like a science fiction writer who looks at the present and tries to imagine the future. As I cook dinner, or walk my son, Oscar, home from school, or find my way from the airport to a train station in an unfamiliar city, I ask myself, what will this be like when I can't see? I perceive everything with this paradoxical double vision, through sighted eyes and through blind ones. While most futures are difficult to see, shrouded as they are beneath the fog of contingency, mine is doubly difficult to visualize. The crystal ball remains clouded over. But I can't just accept blindness as a visual death sentence. The blinder I get, the more curiosity I feel about the world of blindness and what possibilities might exist there. So I went out in search of that world to find a more accurate image of what might be waiting for me. Blindness is a radically distinct way of being in the world. Humans are so fundamentally visual in their understanding and experience that blindness requires its own domain. The early science fiction writer H.G. Wells's short story, The Country of the Blind, takes this idea literally, imagining a civilization of blind men and women who live without any knowledge or need of the sighted world, in a hidden mountain valley. One day, an explorer called Nunez, separated from his expedition in a rock slide, ends up falling into this forgotten valley. There, he discovers the fabled Country of the Blind, which has existed without sight for 15 generations. Every person he meets was born blind, just like their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents before them. They don't even understand the concept of sight. Their language has no word for see. As he comes to terms with his situation, Nunez proceeds with supreme confidence, repeating the old proverb to himself like a mantra, "In the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king." I find myself approaching blindness a bit like Nunez, as an accidental, curious, and sometimes wary visitor to this strange and often beautiful country. For now, I still feel like an outsider. My partial sight sets me at a remove from those who can't access all the visual information that I do. I'll never be native to blindness the way that those born blind are. My brain developed visually, and learning blind skills, from reading with my fingers and ears to drawing mental maps of my city, requires a radical shift in the way I relate to the world around me. But unlike Wells's character, who escapes in the end, I'm here to stay, slowly becoming a naturalized citizen. There's a common set of questions a blind person is almost guaranteed to hear if they spend enough time in public, at least in the U.S. Strangers will turn to them on buses or sidewalks and ask, "How do you eat? Who dresses you? Can you sign your own checks?" Questions like these, which suggest that the world of blindness is an infant's world, where a blind person can't even put on a shirt or bring a fork to his mouth without sighted assistance, are infuriating. They exacerbate the painful difference that the experience of disability carries. No one else is being asked how she accomplishes the most basic tasks of daily living as she waits in line for her breakfast burrito. But for someone like me, who still feels like a tourist in the country of the blind, wondering when I might actually move here, these questions have some urgency. I need to know how I will live and what kind of a blind person I'll be. How will I travel independently? How will I write and read and work? How will I watch movies or appreciate art? How will I experience my son's journey from little kid to teenager as a blind father? This book isn't merely the account of my own experience of vision loss, though. It's the chronicle of an intentional journey I took into the greater world of blindness. Writing it has pulled me deeper into blindness than I otherwise would have gone at this stage in my retinal degeneration. As I lose more and more vision, I feel a new motivation to temper my speculations and fears with knowledge and direct experience. Over the last few years, I traveled around the country, exploring every place I could think of where blindness intersects with contemporary life. Blind people don't benefit from the sort of large, well-established institutions that deaf communities have built. Part of this may be because hearing blind people don't face the same barriers to verbal communication that deaf people do, and so they never needed to develop a distinct shared language. Language is the most important feature in the formation of a community, and sign language is no exception. In the U.S., the signing community is as linguistically and culturally rich as any other language community. Many deaf students describe their arrival at schools like Gallaudet, the world's first fully deaf-centric university in Washington, D.C., as a revelation. Having spent their childhoods feeling isolated from hearing families and peers, suddenly they're plunged into a world of deaf culture and language where they no longer need accommodations to eavesdrop on a conversation or attend a lecture. Still, I found pockets of concentrated blind life. In Florida, I attended the national convention of the largest blindness organization in the U.S., wandering among thousands of blind people in the halls of a colossal Orlando Convention Center, a forest of canes tapping and colliding, and for the first time, I felt the power of being in a space where the blind outnumbered the sighted. I met blind activists from across the political spectrum who made annual visits to their representatives in Congress, and others who marched in street demonstrations with their white canes in one hand and placards in the other. In California and New York, I met blind geniuses working at the cutting edge of digital accessibility, who spend their days soldering circuit boards, designing 3D printed objects, and editing TV soundtracks. I found myself drawn to these media-obsessed tinkerers who seem to approach their blindness as a feature that spurred creativity and invention. I met people who said that their blindness meant nothing to them, that it was a mere attribute, like hair color, and others whose blindness utterly defined and upended their lives. Some recoiled from any mention of the medical cause of their blindness, let alone the prospect of a cure, while others cultivated personal relationships with research ophthalmologists, demonstrating an impressive fluency in the argo of cellular and molecular therapeutics. I sympathized with all of these positions, even as I wondered which attitudes I would adopt for my own life. I tried to understand how blindness was changing my identity as a reader and a writer, as a husband and a father, as a citizen and an otherwise privileged white guy. In the middle of the COVID.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?